Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching. Welcome to another episode of Leaderching. My guest today is Mamta Yar. She's senior partner with Intel Advocare in India. Hi, Mamta, how are you?
Hi, Mirta, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Yeah, it's my privilege. Thank you so much for inviting.
You're so welcome. So I'm really excited to have you today. You're my first guest from India. And as you know, I have a weak spot for India. It's a country I really love and have learned to love by going there, you know, on my business trip. So I'm super excited about this today. If you don't mind, just let's dive directly into it. So my first question would be, what did you dream of becoming as a child?
It's a very interesting question. When I was a child, I always wanted to travel the entire world. And that's what my only dream was. And therefore, with my little mind, I always wanted to be an air hostess so that I can travel and see the whole world. So that was it in my childhood dream.
Excellent. I think that's kind of one picture, right, that getting to know the world is such an amazing thing, right? So, and actually, I think that today with your job today, you have achieved for sure the kind of traveling part of it. We have met several times in different cities around the globe. So I'm sure that you actually kind of fulfilled your dream.
Yes, exactly. And I love this job so much because it gives you so much of opportunity to travel, to know people, to see how the different part of the world are and learn so much from them, meet different people. It's very, very exciting for me.
Excellent. So now, do you think that this desire that you had as a child to know different cultures and to get to know the world had something to do with the fact as to how you were being brought up by your family? Was there anything in your environment to lead you to this curiosity?
Yes, I would say as a child, I was introduced to spirituality, where my father is a great spiritual guide for all of us. We are four of us. And he always talked about galaxies and universe and the world around and the humanity and your purpose of life. So the core value was, as a human being, you have to receive and give more. So that was the theme in life, that you, whatever you receive, you have to give it more to the world. Then only it's a fulfilling human life. So I think, listening to all this at a very young stage, since the time I have taken my conscious, we have been taught that, and I just wanted to explore more and more and more, to the extent today also my dream is to go to maybe NASA or maybe Mars or the moon. I dream all the time. So yes, I would say yes, the childhood culture in the house has given me that vision to learn more about people in the world.
Very interesting, especially the connection. It's not only about what happens here on Earth, but just even the bigger dimension, you know, the galaxy. I think it's the first time I hear one of my guests talking about even the bigger context. It's fascinating. Now tell me, Mamta, how did you go from this childhood dream of wanting to become an air hostess to today? What led you through, you know, to legal practice? What is it that kind of kicked off your desire to pursue this career?
Yes, so if I look back, one thing is very clear. I never wanted to be a lawyer, which I am today. And it was just by chance. And having said that, I come from a very humble background. My father was a farmer, and then he joined a very humble job. We were four of us. The one thing which was ensured was the good food and good education. That was the two basic requirements, according to my father, is to be given. And rest, you have to fulfill your dream. Dream big, do as much as you can. From there, I was born in a very, very small state, which is called Bihar. And I don't know whether you know, it's the northeastern side of the country, from a very humble background. And I did my schooling, and for law, I came to Delhi. Delhi was a big city at that point of time for me. That was the first time when I came out of my state. The dream of a small child to go and travel the entire world took one step at the age of when I finished my graduation. So I was always very good at my studies. I was university topper, school topper, and everything and every very good at studies because my father focused a lot on that. So my family decided, okay, why don't you are so good at studies. Why don't you give civil services exam, which is like civil servant. So the biggest in the administrative side and serve the nation. So that was the reason I was sent to Delhi. And you have to elect two subjects as your mates. So my elder brothers, they said, if you take some professional course, so even if you fail, you have something to fall back on. And that's how law was opted as a subject. Law was also required to be taken as a subject for me because I needed to have a place in stay in Delhi. And my parents wanted me to be in the hostel, which is of the university. So that course provided the hostel if you come at top five in the entrance exam. So I was at number two. I got the hostel, and that's how I got into a different world from a small city to a big city. And then I started studying law. Law was like, for me, a cakewalk, if I can say. Because I'm a zoology honors student. I was gold medalist, and it was a lot of hard work for grappling with all the science and, you know, like all aspects. And I think because of the science background, I had that reasoning of mind, and which helped me just to understand law very easily. But when I came to Delhi, it was like a cultural shock, environmental shock, feeling that how differently you were treated from a protected background to an exposed background, where I felt the immediate feeling was there is a lot of discrimination, there is a lot of prejudgmental, there is gender biasness, a lot, which I would very accept. I was not prepared. My parents prepared me to dream big, but I was not prepared for this. And people will tease. I didn't know how to speak English very fluently, to tell you honestly. So I come from that background. I could understand, but I was not so fluent that, you know, I can talk to everybody without any hesitation. So it was a big challenge for me. But nevertheless, I had my strong point of working very hard, working on my books. I love my books. I love traveling. I love listening to music. I love, you know, all that which can give you a new experience. So I was good. Sorry. Yeah.
No worries. But I think one point seems really relevant for me, and I think many of us may have gone through a similar experience, right? The one of being in a very kind of cocoon environment where we have a loving family around us, you know, also the bigger family, right? Not only the strictly close family, but just an environment we know, an environment we grow up in. And then once of a sudden, because of our studies or because of work, sometimes at a young age, we are taken out of that kind of comfort zone, and we are placed in a comfort zone, in a discomfort zone, where everything is so new and also very challenging. I was wondering, because at that time, we are living through very different times today. Our days, even during the pandemic season, we have Zoom calls like we are having now, and we have WhatsApp and everything. But at our times, when we were much younger and studying, there was no such thing, right? It was kind of, even the cell phones came later, and it was only for very privileged people that could have that. So how did you kind of keep in touch with your family? How did you manage to stay connected? And, you know, because I'm sure it was something that you longed for, right? The same it was for me. I was like always trying to have this connection with my parents when I was abroad at a young age, because I was so much used to be with them. How did you manage that part of the journey, so to say?
And you're making me nostalgic. And why so? Because in the hostel, there was phones. And whenever the phone rings, the person sitting there would announce your room number and name, that your call from the family. And the joy, Mirtha, the joy which you feel to experience was like out of the world. So my room was B62. B62, Mamta, call for you. You know, and that was like, you come running all the way from the stairs. I was on the third floor, coming all the way and then talking to family. That was one way. And the other way was that we had a telephone booth. And then if you want to make a call, you can make it from your hostel, or you can go out during the daytime and make from the telephone booth. So that was the only way you could have contacted your parents.
Yeah. So similar experience to mine. I also had to go to a phone booth, and people don't remember this anymore, right? That we didn't have a device with us that we could call at whatever time we had to. And then you had to announce when you would call, so to make sure that everyone was there, right? But let's go back to another thing. I think you mentioned something, and as you know me a little bit, you will certainly understand why I'm going back to this. As you know, I'm very passionate about diversity topic, about the gender topic. And you just mentioned that one of the things that you were confronted with when you arrived from your home state to Delhi was that there was a lot of challenges in this area. Can you tell our audience a little bit how you managed to stay strong, how you managed to have this self-confidence and not let yourself be, you know, distracted or even maybe, you know, intimidated by those biases and challenges you were facing?
Sure. When I joined the college, it was primarily driven by men, I would say, because in law there were very few girls, and the girls primarily from the local Delhi were there. Very, very few girls from outside this big cities. So we were very looked down. And even if you say something, people will mock. And then to keep your courage and to keep your focus intact, you had only one thing to show up, which is you study hard and you come out with good marks. You are very sincere in your studies. So by the time the results would come, your name always comes at first or second. And that was the thing which gives the recognition, you know, like people started recognizing, okay, it's something more than what they believe. That was one. And I would say when I started my practice, that was more difficult. College was still okay. When I started my practice, I'm a first generation lawyer. Nobody in my entire family is a lawyer. And then I wanted to do litigation. I was always kind of a child. If I want to do something, I will do something no matter if I fail. It doesn't matter. But I want to do, I will experience, okay, I can't do it. Maybe I'll change my path. But I wanted to do it. So I wanted to do litigation. My family discouraged. Why are you doing this? Nobody knows how to guide you. I said, that's all right. And then when I wanted to go to court, I was looking for some job. And everybody said, no, what will you do? There is no place. We work very late night. And I still remember in one of the interviews when I was denied, I said, you work late night, but that's all right. What is the problem? I can also work late night. So long if you respect women, I'm happy to work. And that was probably my first starting. The person got very triggered. And, you know, because I was frustrated by that time. And I said, I'm sure you must be having daughters. If they face the same thing, would you accept they are being denied just because they are a girl or they are a woman? Then he said, okay, fine, you can work with me. And I started with 1,000 rupees, which will be like $20 a month. Yeah. And then that was not the end of the story. Even if you go to court, the judges will not take you seriously. The things have changed over the period of time. We are very vocal. We are very convincing. But when I started in 1999, so we are going exactly, I would say, 20 years back almost. So 21 years back, it was very, very challenging. At every stage, it was challenging.
I think there's two things that resonate with me. The first thing, and maybe just to share this with you, because I think there is a parallel here. My first job as a lawyer was in Peru, right? I went back after my law degree here in Switzerland, and during my law studies here in Switzerland, I used to work as a translator, and I used to, support myself during my studies with that salary, which was quite a good one because, translations are quite well paid here. But I wanted to go back to my roots to experience what Peru is about and to learn more about the home country of my parents. And I remember that my first job, I was paid in a check every 2 weeks, and it was $60, right? And I had to live with $120 a month in Peru. And it's not that, it's actually pretty much, as you said, 20 years ago, more or less, right, when I was starting that first job just after law school. And I think it's really fascinating for me to see how many expectations young lawyers have today, right? They
Yes.
want to have the right place, the right hours, work-life balance, and in a sense, thanks God, we have made also progress in the sense that today being a female lawyer is looked as almost normal. Becoming a partner, it's a different story in many countries. I know it's not so much the case for you now, thanks God, and you're a good example of that. But I know still many, many countries where having partners and senior partners in law firms is not easy. Having people in corporate positions as females is not easy either. But I think it resonates with me really, first of all, this fact that we had to start small somewhere, right? And I think it's not a bad thing. It teaches you a lot of I think at least endurance for me. It was like patience and endurance is was one of the things that I learned there. And the other thing that resonates to me that you just mentioned as well is the fact that sometimes you just have to ask the challenging questions, right? Why is it that you don't want to have a female working with you? Don't you have daughters? Don't you have like kind of showing people what it is they are, which kind of benchmark they're using that is just wrong, right? That doesn't make sense. It's not rational, in particular for lawyers, right? Because lawyers, it's all about being rational, structured, and you're thinking. And so when people are acting or telling you things that really don't make sense, I think it makes a lot of times it helps when you tell them, well, are you analyzing what you're telling me? Are you really still pretending that this is what you're saying? And so I just wanted to share this because I think it's very true. Now, going from there, maybe Mamta, you have been in so many different positions, and I'm sure you have had a lot of different managers. So I wanted to ask you, do you think that leadership is something that we kind of that everyone can learn, male, female, or other gender types? Do you think it's something that can be kind of built up with effort?
I would say leadership is a state of mind. It shows what kind of person you are. I would say it depends. I would say it can't be built on if you are not open to it. Of course, everything can be learned, but you have to change the very basic grain of your personality. If you are not a kind of person who can encourage, allow, admire good things in others, giving opportunity to others, building on others, give credit to others, learn from others. These are all inclusive behavior. If you do not have that, it is not in your personality, then you can't inculcate it. If you want to try it, and which is a good thing, I keep on hearing this leadership quality, but when you go in the real world and you wonder, this is not leadership, I'm sorry. And I have been challenging a lot to my surroundings, and one of the core thing which I would say I try and do in whatever little way, that since I started from a very humble background and from scratch of $20 in a month, one thing which I've learned that you connect to people very easily because it keeps you always very rooted. You understand them, you want to pull them up. You want to give them opportunity to make most of in their life, and you don't want to go through them to go through the same way which you have gone. So you want to eliminate those hurdles which as a person maybe you have gone through and make it easier for them. I think that will be one of the contribution as a leader. Every leader should think. That's where I can't give you the answer whether it is inbuilt. It depends on person too. It's a personality. If you can correct your personality, it can be corrected, but it's a huge task.
So, I think the first sentence that you mentioned is kind of, for me, it's probably the key point. I think leadership is a question of mindset. It's really a question of mindset. I think you mentioned all of these attributes that also, in my view, make a great leader. The great leader is the one that is humble enough to continue learning every day. And for that, you have to have an open mind, right? You have to admit that you are not all savvy, that you don't have all the answers. I think it's also what you also said, one of the criterion of really kind of bringing others up with you, right? Helping them to overcome and even preparing them to take over from you, right? It's like sometimes people are scared to push their team members or associates too hard because they think that they're putting themselves at risk by doing so. And I always think there is little which is more rewarding than to see actually that a junior associate of yours becomes then a senior associate and then able to take over from your manager role and is then sitting on your spot. I think it kind of gives you not only the fact that you have been there for the person and have helped her, but also this you know, leaving a legacy to someone else that would continue to hopefully drive according to the same principles, right? And I agree with you. I don't think it's easy. And I think we hear a lot of talk about leadership, and it seems like people think that it's about reading books or attending courses. And I think that for me, again, once more, the key point that you mentioned is really you first have to work on yourself. And it's only once you reach that level of awareness as to where you are, right? And we are all at different places, and there is moments where we are better and there's moments we are not that good, depending on a lot of things. But I think this awareness is probably the first step to embracing leadership.
Yeah.
Thank you for
completely.
That. So maybe now turning to a question which I think our audience might be interested, because I'm not sure that all of them have traveled to India and know the Indian culture. And obviously the Indian culture seems to be like, oh, there is one Indian culture. And actually we know it's far from being true. It's a very, very complex, diverse country with a lot of languages and so on and so on. So, just hang on a second, sorry. I think something happened on the recording. Let me check. No, it's still going ahead, okay. Sorry, I will start again this little part with India and then we take from there. So Mamta, I wanted to talk a little bit more about India, because I'm sure that a lot of the people who are listening to us today might not know actually India very well, or may have like a one-sided idea of what India is. And it is a very diverse, complex country with a lot of different cultures coming together. I wanted to talk a little bit about this, because one of the things that really impressed me when I went to Delhi and Mumbai was the fact that at the dinner or lunch, we could have people from so many different religions, backgrounds, languages, even their food culture was different, all sitting together around the table, all talking to each other in English. And to me, this was kind of all this diversity coming together and finding a communication that seemed to be so easy. Now, I know, obviously, the Indian history has shown us diversity has not always been easy in India. But I wanted to hear from you a little bit. What do you think makes it possible for India to be so diverse and at the same time still find a common ground?
Yes, I think India is a great country to begin with, and it's really diverse from north to south to east to west. The cultures are different in each state. We have 24 or 26 states, each state has its own language, its own way of cooking, its own festival, its own dress. The same, I am a foreigner if I go to South because I don't understand their language. So the if I go to East, I don't understand the language. So the only common language in the country to keep people united is English, which actually has been, I would say, British ruled on us, but one of the gift, the blessing in disguise was this language which they left behind. Today, right across from top to bottom, you know, the entire country, the education system is in English. All the high courts in India is in English. All administrative work is being done in English. So people are very comfortable from the very childhood. It's compulsory to study a language which is going to connect you not only within your country, but across the world. So I think that is a very, very interesting part. And one thing which India has, no matter which state you are born in and which family you are brought up, is that the warmth, the value of humanity, you will, the moment you will step in India, I would say you will notice three things. One, people, you will see people all around because it's a huge population. The second, people are very warm, very welcoming, very sharing because that's in our culture. Spirituality is deep in the land. It's in the soil. It is what we have inherited. To share, I would say, is in our blood. So therefore, it becomes very easy for us to be inclusive for the world and amongst us. So that's why you will find no matter where you go, even the person is not understanding your language, will stop by, probably try to help you, even offer you food, drink, whatever, you know. So it's very, very different. It's also very different experience for us when we go to other country and then we realize, wow, we are different. We get connected very easily to people. We are very simple people. So I would say yes. It's diversity, it's simplicity, it's very colorful, it's very warm, it's very enriched.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I can confirm that indeed, it's very difficult to travel through India without having people, you know, offering help and being actually very, very warm. And that's why I love the country so much. So I wanted to ask you a last question about gender equality. And I wanted to know from you if you think that in India we are going in the right direction, because we are having this discussion over the world. It's more present our days than it was maybe 10 years ago, as you know. Is it also a topic that in India is currently being discussed and pushed by many, or how does it go?
It is discussed, but I would say it's still under the carpet. There are breakthrough paths. It is not the same what it was 10 years back because we have progressed, but there is a lot to be done. There is an unset atmosphere which conveys, I would say, that, oh, you are a woman, you have many roles to play. We are not sure whether you will be able to give so much of time which profession demands. That's a very unsaid thing. And Mirtha, at this point of time, I would like to share that this is what I had broken wherever I have worked, and particularly in my firm. I always say there is nobody in the firm which works harder than me. And I can say it with pride, and everybody would admit. Why I had to do that? Because I never wanted to hear, even in my subconscious or conscious, that anybody working harder than me, that can't be. You can work better, you can be more talented, but you know, that unset responsibility and the burden which you put on yourself is also needs to be diminished, because somewhere yeah. deep down, you take upon yourself, I need to prove because I'm a woman.
Yes.
That, unless that is changed, the world is not going to change, and it is not different for India.
Thank you so much. And I think that's a very, very important point. I think you mentioned it, and I think many of my female guests have mentioned it. I think a lot of the pressure comes not only from our environment and our education, but it comes from the fact that we feel pressured ourselves by ourselves to prove that we can do the same or even
Yes.
better than others. And I agree with you, as long as we will have to this feeling that we need to do more, we will obviously always be in a position where we're already starting with a little weakness, right? Because we are demanding so much of ourselves, and we are very tough on ourselves, women especially. Very often I see that we actually are very, very strict with ourselves and are very demanding, whereas this might be not always the case with our colleagues that are male. So I think it's a very important point to remember. And as you said, it's not only the case in India, but in many, many countries, also in Switzerland. So I think that's something that we share pretty much around the globe. And we hope, obviously, that someday this will get better. No worries. So my question is, Mamta, if you could go back to when you were 20 years old with the experience that you have today, what would you advise yourself?
Believe in yourself, keep going, don't demand so much of you. Life is much more simpler, beautiful. Just live it, enjoy every moment of it.
Well,
because I believe I had sacrificed a lot of my young age in proving myself. I would definitely like to give myself, if I go back with this experience, no need. Yes, it made me a better human being, but somewhere I always feel that life could have been a little simpler, more lucid, more less of challenges. That would be my answer.
Thank you so much. There is little that I can add to that, because I think it's a really universal kind of almost wisdom, I would say, right? It's like we sometimes make our lives more complex ourselves just by trying too hard sometimes, right? To achieve what we probably would have achieved nevertheless, because, you know, there is no miracles. People work hard and they get to where they deserve to get. So thank you so much, Mamta, for being my guest today. It has been a pleasure. And I hope to see you face to face very soon.
Yes, thank you, Mirtha. And it's been lovely talking to you. And you are such an inspiring woman. Thank you for making me a guest on your podcast. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you liked this episode of Leadership in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!